All right, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Friday, May 17th, 2024. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger. Thank you for joining me today. This is going to be a very short broadcast because we are dealing with some pretty severe power outages in Central Texas and the Houston area. Some windstorms blew through the area in the afternoon and took out a lot of power lines and, you know, basically blew trees over power lines. And of course, it gave me an opportunity to double check all my, you know, my backup power solutions, and they are working fine now. A little more trouble than I had hoped getting it all up and running, but we're running on diesel at the moment. And there are, I think at one point there were 100,000 people in Houston without power. I think that's down to tens of thousands, but it's still quite significant. And so anyway, as a result, there are a lot of disruptions, and I'm supposed to be at an event today on Friday, the Exit and Build Land Summit. I'm not sure if that's impacted by the power outages. I imagine it's still going to be okay, but I wonder if some of the hotels where people are staying don't have any power. Could be kind of interesting. But anyway, I've got a couple of special reports for you. I've got an interview that I recorded earlier, and then we have a fascinating, disturbing story here. This is a NOTAM issued by the FAA. NOTAM used to stand for Notice to Airmen, but they took the man out of it. I forgot what it stands for now. Probably Notice to Air Mams is probably what it means. Anyway, there's a NOTAM. I heard about this. I was sent a link. I didn't trust it automatically, so I looked it up. If you go to notams.faa.gov and you look up the area of operation known as the KZAK Oakland area, there's a NOTAM labeled A1922/24. And here's what it says. The Russian Federation plans to conduct rocket firings. Impact area within the Oakland ARTCC, I think that's Air Traffic Control Center, Oceanic FIR is something, an area defined as, and then they give the latitude, longitude coordinates there to the point of origin for flight safety. Air traffic control will not clear IFR flight through the impact area. That's instrument flights through the impact area until May 26th. Okay. So, and this was created on May 16th. So we're talking 10 days of Russians firing rockets, missiles, you know, who knows what they're firing. Now, this is off the coast of San Diego. It's just kind of southwest of San Diego. It's somewhere like 300 nautical miles off the coast. It's in international waters, so Russia's not doing anything illegal, but they are firing rockets right off the coast, the west coast of the United States. Huh, I wonder why they might be doing that and why this is going to last 10 days. If they decided to launch nuclear missiles, could anybody in the U.S. stop them? Could the U.S. military stop that? I think the answer is no. Because I think what Russia is saying is that, hey, America, if you want to keep pushing your missiles into Ukraine, really close to the border of Russia, well, we, Russia, we have ships, and we can sail them pretty close to your coastline and stay in international waters, and then we can do a bunch of nuclear missile testing, because that's what they announced, you know, several days ago. They're going to test a lot of nuclear missile launch drills. Remember that? And those are already underway in Russia. But now it appears like those drills include ocean launches off the west coast of the United States. So there couldn't be a more clear communication from Russia that's telling the United States to back the bleep off. It's like, well, here we go. There are multiple NOTAMs covering this. There's A1924/24. There's A1923/24. And then there's the one I just mentioned, the A1922/24. So, well, there you go. That's kind of interesting, right? Meanwhile, in a related story, you know, Putin was visiting with China's President Xi recently. And after that meeting, Putin announced that 90% of transactions or settlements between Russia and China are being carried out in their own national currencies and not the dollar. So they've switched almost entirely now to rubles and yuan. And Putin says it's led to a strong boost in trade. It says bypassing the US dollar. And then according to Putin, trade between Russia and China soared 25% in 2023. That's a big increase. It reached almost $250 billion just between Russia and China. Wow. Putin says that Moscow is not directly seeking de-dollarization, but that the process is inevitable. He's very much correct about that. The de-dollarization outcome, it is just inevitable. Everybody's going to turn against the dollar because why would anybody keep using it? There's no point in using it when it can be weaponized against you and all your assets stolen. So think about this, folks. When we talk about BRICS currencies and when I interview people like Andy Shechtman and Gerald Celente and so on, it's not just talk. It's not just a theory. It's happening right now. The dollar is being dropped by more and more countries around the world. So what does that mean for the future of the dollar? The dollar is done. The dollar is going to, it's going to collapse. There's another story today that's pretty crazy. This is from the post-millennial, let's see here. Diversity executive scams Facebook and Nike out of millions in elaborate fraud scheme. And this story says a former diversity program manager at Facebook and Nike has been sentenced to more than 5 years in prison for stealing over $5 million through an elaborate scheme involving fraudulent vendors, fictitious paperwork, and cash kickbacks. So this woman, I'm not going to give her name, 38 years old, from Marietta, Georgia. She served as the lead strategist and global head of employee resource groups and diversity engagement. There's a long-ass title. At Facebook. And then from January 2017 to September 2021, she led the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at Facebook. That's the DEI. And was responsible for developing and executing DEI initiatives and programs. Okay. So U.S. Attorney Ryan Buchanan says that this woman had access to company credit cards and the authority to submit purchase requisitions and approve invoices. She used that position, and she's already been convicted, to cheat and defraud the company by having Facebook pay these individuals for goods and services that were never provided, and then she got kickbacks from those people. So she had probably friends and acquaintances be like shell companies. Like, oh, you could say you're providing a consulting service, and then we'll pay you $500,000, and then, you know, you give me half or whatever. So she linked PayPal, Venmo, and Cash App accounts to her Facebook credit cards. And then she used those accounts to pay friends, relatives, and others for goods and services that were never provided. And then she submitted fraudulent expense reports claiming that her associates or their businesses had performed work on events for Facebook when they had not done so. Okay, you get the idea. It says here that this woman recruited friends, relatives, former interns, nannies, babysitters, a hairstylist, and her university tutor to participate in the scheme. Because this is what diversity, equity, and inclusion is all about. It's fraud. So, of course, the leaders of DEI are very often fraudsters. So, anyway, she was terminated from Facebook. So she went to work for Nike as the senior director of diversity, equity, and inclusion all the way up to February 2023. Apparently, she did the same exact vendor scheme to defraud Nike. I mean, she was just working the system. And by the way, how many check boxes of DEI do you think this person checks off, huh? Yeah, what do you think her skin color is, for example? What do you think her belief system is? Yeah, you kind of get the idea. So she was put into this position because of her skin color and her pro-LGBT beliefs and, you know, all that woke nonsense. And then she just used it to commit massive fraud. And now she's going to prison for 5 years and 3 months. Wow, followed by 3 years of supervised release. She was ordered to pay $5 million back to Facebook. Where are you going to get $5 million? And $121,000 to Nike. And she pled guilty to wire fraud. Okay, so where's she going to get $5 million? No problem. Just go work for the federal government, because they're handing out money to all kinds of woke criminal fraudsters every single day. But I thought I would bring you that story just to prove to you yet again that the whole, the wokeism, the DEI, how they're putting these people in positions of diversity and equity. And what is it about these people that they just want to cheat all the time? They never want to earn anything for themselves, but they want to squat in people's homes, effectively stealing their homes. They want to steal money from people, to steal money from corporations. They're always about stealing. And by the way, remember when Black Lives Matter was busted after receiving all these like $100 million plus in donations from McDonald's and Nike and all these woke-tard corporations that were trying to virtue signal? And then where did that money go? Oh, luxury condos and mansions and luxury vehicles. And some of it just vanished into, again, accounts of friends and probably nannies. And I mean, it's a massive, massive fraud. And so all this money just vanished into nowhere. And it's rare that somebody actually gets prosecuted for this, by the way. And by the way, that whole operation that was just described there, that's exactly how foreign aid works for Ukraine, too. So all these billions of dollars go to Ukraine, and then the Ukrainian government, and this is not unique to Ukraine. This happens everywhere. This happens in the U.S. Obviously, it happens in Israel. It happens everywhere. But then, you know, the Ukrainian government, they have all their friends and nannies and haircut professionals and dog walkers and babysitters and everybody signed up with shell companies, and then they direct all the money to these shell companies. Did you hear that? This is why Russia is making such aggressive gains as they're moving on Kharkiv, because apparently there were millions of dollars that were supposed to be spent on building defenses, you know, like dragon's teeth, which are these giant sort of pyramid-shaped concrete things that stop tanks. And so all this money was spent on these defenses, but the defenses weren't built. Where did the money go? Oh, went into people's pockets. And that's why there are no defenses in Kharkiv. I mean, it's the same story everywhere. I mean, Haiti, you want to see corruption? Audit Haiti. Be like, oh my God, I can't believe a country could be so corrupt. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You want to find corruption? Find woke leftists who are put in charge of money. They will always shuffle it into their own pockets one way or another, usually with some kind of horrible fraud. It's just the way they operate. Being woke is being a fraud in the first place. So by extension, they're also frauds in the way they handle other people's money. Think about it. All right, now we're going to go to today's special reports. As I said, I'm keeping this short today. First special report is entitled, Why the Majority of Jews Agree That Zionism Must End. Now, why did I choose to record this report? I think it's really critical to restate the principles that I'm expressing in these podcasts, which is the principle that we don't have anything against Jews or Jewish people. In fact, most Jews are on the same side that I am when it comes to criticizing the philosophy of Zionism. Now, of course, the Zionists try to conflate those two And they dishonestly try to claim that if you criticize Zionism, you must hate all Jews. Now, remember that trick when Obama was president? When everybody on the left said that, well, if you criticize Obama's policies, then you're a racist. Remember that? And then all the conservatives were like, no, that doesn't make any sense. We can criticize his, let's say, taxation policies. Doesn't mean we hate black people, right? Because that's crazy. It's just that Obama is black and we disagree with his policy. Well, same thing about Zionism. Some Jews are Zionists, but most Jews are not Zionists. All Zionists, though, are Jewish, but again, not the other way around. So when you talk about criticism of Zionism, that is not attacking Jews or people of Jewish faith or Jewish ethnicity or Jewish ancestry, not in any way whatsoever. But what is clear is that the dark philosophy of Zionism, which is a theocratic supremacist philosophy that says one group of people are superior to all others, and that this one group of people, the Zionists, are chosen by God to rule over earth and to kill anybody else who are considered lower animals, by the way, that philosophy is not compatible with human civilization. And it's not, by the way, what most Jews believe all over the world. So to reiterate, well, you'll hear the full report here, but I am opposed to every philosophy of supremacism, ethnic supremacism, religious supremacism, country of origin supremacism, whatever, skin color supremacism. I'm opposed to all forms of supremacism because I believe that all human beings are created equally and created in the image of God, whether they're Jews or Muslims or blacks or whites or men or women, and many other examples, obviously, as well. So here's the first report, why the majority of Jews agree that Zionism must end. Check this out, and then we will continue with another special report on the other side. Welcome to this podcast on why Jews agree with the idea of ending the philosophy of Zionism in order for Jewish people to prosper and to be safe for the future of our planet. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. And obviously, this is a controversial podcast in the minds of some, mostly the Zionists, who don't want anybody to criticize their philosophy, which is rooted in ethnic supremacy and genocide. But most Jews disagree with this philosophy of Zionism. And this is why a significant portion of the protesters on campus, you know, across the U.S. universities and colleges and so on, a significant portion, in some cases more than half, of the protesters are Jewish. And this is why a prominent Jewish American, by the way, from the Department of Interior, who worked on the Joe Biden campaign, who worked with Kamala Harris, she recently resigned and said she just cannot, in good conscience, work for this administration that has blood on its hands because it is complicit in the ongoing genocide against innocent people. And this woman, who deserves praise for her courage, she is, of course, Jewish. She's a Jewish American. And she said that one of the most important lessons that she's learned as a Jewish American is the sanctity of human life. If you're Jewish, you value humanity. And if you're honest about your faith, whether it's Judaism or Catholicism or Christianity or what have you, then you place equal value on all human lives, including the lives of Palestinians or any other ethnic group or any other geographic group of people. But Zionism doesn't do that. Zionism says that there's one group of people who are granted the authority by God to rule over all other people and even to exterminate other people and to take their land, to steal their resources, such as during the Nakba. And since then, by the way, 76 years of essentially Zionist terrorism against the Palestinian people. And that's not hyperbole. That's not an exaggeration. That is an accurate description of what the Zionists have done to the native people there, the indigenous people, you could say, of what is generally considered to be Palestine. Now, most Jewish people around the world agree with what I'm saying here. Now, just to be clear, I am not Jewish, and I don't claim to speak for all Jewish people, obviously. But I've noticed so many Jewish people agreeing with what I'm saying here, and more importantly, pointing out that for Jewish people to prosper for the future of our world, it's critical that the Jewish people are perceived as people who are willing to live in peace with others. And most Jewish people are exactly that way, at least in my observations and experience, is they make good neighbors, good people, good business associates, and so on. And they don't want to just kill everybody around them who's different, and they don't want to just rule over everybody around them. Most Jewish people are good people. It's the Zionists who are these genocidal mass murderers and power-hungry and always self-victimizing groups of people who claim that they alone have been granted the right by God to rule the world, and they demand everybody bow down obediently to their demands, which is not acceptable. That's not how you live in peace and harmony in our world. You have to learn to get along with other people if you hope to have a future as a nation or as an ethnic group, and so on. And by the way, the simple test for this is imagine any other group behaving the way that Israel behaves today. I mean, imagine if a bunch of, let's say, white nationalist Germans behaved this way and said that, well, God ordained them to rule over the world and they get to kill everybody around them and they consider everybody else to be subhumans. Well, you don't have to imagine. We already saw that in history. That was the Third Reich under Adolf Hitler. It was the Holocaust, and it was an atrocity against humanity. But today we have another atrocity, although not on as large a scale, but another atrocity being carried out by the Zionists in Israel against the Palestinian people. And just because the history of Israel demonstrated the suffering of the Jewish people in Europe, that does not justify carrying out ethnic cleansing and genocide against other people today in 2024. Now, some very small-minded people accuse me of somehow being anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. That's nonsense. That's just lazy thinking. That's dishonest thinking. In no way am I anti-Semitic. And by the way, Semites include the Palestinian people and Arab people. And I mean, anti-Semitic doesn't mean that just that you're opposed to Jewish people or Zionist people. It's a much broader definition. And I'm opposed to no group of people except evil people. So not anti-Semitic at all, and certainly not anti-Jewish. I believe in the divinity of human life. I believe in the sanctity of every human being. I believe that a Jewish person is a reflection of the creation of God, just like a Christian person or a Buddhist person, or if you talk about skin colors, a black person, a white person, an Asian person, a Hispanic person. I believe that all human life has dignity. And that's why I'm opposed to Zionism, because Zionism is Satanism. Zionism is a destructive satanic cult of power-hungry lunatics who do not respect human life. So by definition, if you respect human life, you have to be opposed to Zionism, the philosophy. That does not make you opposed to the Jewish people. In fact, it makes you in alignment with most Jewish people, especially those who are protesting this genocidal, you know, ethnic cleansing, bombing of Palestinians and women and children to the tune of, at least as we know now, 35,000 dead civilians in Gaza. And of course, Israel says, oh no, that's not true. They're not dead civilians. They're dead terrorists. That's basically what Israel says, that their bombing was justified because they killed mostly just terrorists, they claim. Well, that's absurd. It's like bombing a city and then claiming that half the dead were just terrorists and therefore it's okay. That's exactly what Israel has done. They've bombed Gaza into oblivion and they've killed at least 35,000 people. And then they claim it's perfectly justified. That is not acceptable in on planet Earth to behave in that manner. And for our world to be able to live in peace, and for us to embrace what are generally considered liberal ideas of tolerance and acceptance and so-called diversity, you can't just roll around and say, we're going to bomb all these people that we think are animals because we don't like them. We don't like their religion. We don't like their skin color, what have you, which is exactly what Zionism does. That is not compatible with human civilization. And that's why I've said that the philosophy of Zionism and the actions of modern day Israel are irreconcilable with fundamental human rights principles. And I stand by those statements. And me being attacked or called names by a bunch of Zionists, that's not going to change my principles. If you want to live in a world where you're safe, where your children are safe, where your community is safe, then you need to reflect the values of protecting human rights and human dignity across the board as universal principles. But if you run around saying that, well, this one group has the right to slaughter and murder and exterminate this other group because this one group is, you know, ordained by God to carry out these acts, well, guess what? That could be turned against you one day, because one day then some other group can say, well, God told us to kill you. And, you know, and how can you argue with that if you supported the Zionists? Because the Zionists have the same argument. God told us to kill all these people and take their land and take their resources and steal their homes. Okay, well, guess what? That's not okay. That is not compatible with sustainable human civilization. I mean, it's Israel behaves like an insane serial killer, actually just running around killing everybody and thinking God told them to do that. I mean, we used to lock those people up in psychiatric wards. Now, you take a guy like Netanyahu, they make him, you know, prime minister or whatever his title is there, the chief genocidal agent. And so the thing about universal principles is they have to be universal. So if you say to me that, oh, I'm opposed to the killing of children because you're talking about abortion, because let's say you're a conservative Christian, you're like, abortion is wrong. Did you know they go into the womb and they rip the arms and legs off the unborn baby? And that's cruel and that's evil and that's murder. And I'm like, yeah, that's horrible. That is murder, killing an unborn child. But then if that same person turns around and says to me, but it's okay to rip their limbs apart after they're born if they're Palestinian children, then I say, you have no principles. You've abandoned your principles. Now you're saying you support murdering children after they're born, as long as they're Palestinian children. And there are plenty of Israel supporters and Zionists who have that exact position. They're all in favor of child murder, but then they claim they're opposed to abortion. See, that's irreconcilable. That's some kind of mental illness to hold those two contradictory beliefs in your mind at the same time. If you're against abortion, you have to be opposed to the murder of children. And simultaneously, if you think that it's the right of J6 protesters to peacefully protest against the rigged 2020 election, then you also have to support the right of students and academics to peacefully protest their beliefs. If they're saying Free Palestine or From the River to the Sea or whatever they're chanting, as long as they're not instigating violence, and almost none of them did, by the way. It was almost all peaceful, you know, completely unarmed students just marching and saying, hey, free Palestine. But then all these same conservatives who were in favor of J6 protesters, suddenly they want the Palestinian students to be rounded up and locked up and prosecuted and labeled terrorists and have their free speech suppressed and so on. And again, it brings me to the point is that you have no principles. You've abandoned this idea of the First Amendment all of a sudden. You know, First Amendment was great when you were pro-Trump and you were protesting against the rigged election. But what happened to the First Amendment when these students were protesting against genocide? Oh, all of a sudden, they don't have that right? Really? So you see the silver lining of this current situation, although it is a horrific situation. The silver lining is that it's outing people, it's exposing people who never had core beliefs in the first place. They pretended to in order to get an audience, like Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, you know, a bunch of others, a bunch of influencers. They pretended to have values like freedom of speech, anti-cancel culture, things like that. But when it came down to it, they oppose freedom of speech. And they engage in cancel culture. Because now we see they're all in for the Zionist tribe, even if that means murdering babies. So they were never really opposed to abortion, because they support it now as long as it's happening in Palestine. So that's the silver lining of this horrifying situation, is you're beginning to see very clearly who is who. Who has principles and who does not. If you're in favor of Israel's ongoing genocidal campaign of ethnic cleansing and mass murder of Palestinians, then you don't have pro-human principles, no matter what you claim, no matter what you say. If you think that students who are peacefully saying free Palestine should be silenced or brutally assaulted by police or rounded up or deported, then you don't have principles of freedom of speech. You are an authoritarian. And what's funny is that many people who are opposed to these students right now, they were the very same people who were screaming about the censorship of the left for the last 5-6 years. How dare these leftists censor all of our free speech, our pro-Trump speech, our pro-America speech? It's all being censored. We need freedom of speech. We stand for the First Amendment, they would say, until someone says, what about free Palestine? Then it's, oh, no free speech for you, right? That's what we're seeing in spades right now. You know, Senator Ted Cruz, Governor Abbott of Texas, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, a bunch of senators, lots of senators, mostly GOP senators, completely opposed to the First Amendment in this context now. So again, they have no principles. They've abandoned them. All it took was a little bit of AIPAC money, and they abandoned them. Well, hey, guess what? AIPAC doesn't pay me anything. And even if they tried to, I would reject it. I don't want your blood money. Because I have principles. My principles are universal. I even agree with the right of people to speak, even if I disagree with what they're saying. And that's why that has been our principles on Brighteon.com, the free speech video platform that I founded. And I've always consistently said that we welcome people to come on and post videos, even LGBT videos. I may disagree with them vehemently, but if they're not calling for violence and they're not violating the law directly or teaching people how to build, you know, explosives or whatever, which would violate the law, they're welcome on the platform. And I've been consistent about that. People can come on the platforms and they can say all kinds of things with which I may disagree or you may disagree, but I believe in their right to say it. And the same is true on a college campus. I believe in the right of these students to peacefully shout whatever slogans they want, as long as the slogans aren't directly calling for violence against somebody. But then the Zionists come along and say, well, when they say from the river to the sea, that's violence. But those same Zionists, they use the phrase from the river to the sea. But when they say it, they say that's okay, because God gave them the right to control everything from the river to the sea. So you see how intellectually dishonest that is? Intellectually lazy? Like, you can't say this phrase. When you say it, you're a terrorist. When we say it, we're ordained by God. I'm sorry, that doesn't fly. You'd have to be a very low IQ person to believe that. To believe that Zionists can say this, but Palestinians can't. And from the river to the sea, by the way, means I think it's from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, that whole region, which, frankly, Israel, since 1948 and the Nakba, Israel has become the terrorists of the region, terrorizing the native Palestinian people there from the river to the sea, and even beyond that. And so don't the people who were there before 1948 have the right to say, hey, we want our land back. We want our homes back. We want our farms back that you stole from us. Of course they have the right to say that. And they have the right to say that on a college campus. Now, you may or may not agree with their policy. You may think that, no, Israel stole it fair and square. Okay, that's your belief. Well, Why don't you go on campus and say, from the river to the sea, Israel shall be free. Okay, I agree with your right to say it. I agree with your right to say it. Doesn't mean I have to agree with what you're saying. And that's the difference. But we live in a world now where everybody's lost their minds, especially the GOP, and now the right-wing groups have lost their minds. They've abandoned all their principles. They're not opposed to killing children anymore. They're not supporting the freedom of speech. They have abandoned the First Amendment. They've abandoned all their principles at this point in order to double down for Zionists. And frankly, I'm not part of that. I will never sign up for something like that. I believe in fundamental, divine, human principles. And I'm sticking with it. It's very simple. Regardless of the social cost or the censorship cost or how many trolls don't like it. Oh, how dare you say this or say that or think this or think that. It's very simple. I don't have to go to some elaborate length to explain my beliefs. It's very simple. I believe in the universal dignity of human lives. I believe in the dignity of the lives of Palestinian people, of Black people, of white people, of Jewish people, and even of Israeli people. I think they have the same equal rights as anybody else, but they shouldn't have supremacist extra rights to kill somebody else or to conquer and rule and suppress or subjugate somebody else. They have no such right. Just as in America, the white plantation owners in the South, you know, in the 19th century and earlier, they had no right to subjugate African slaves. Slavery was wrong, just as subjugation was wrong of the African people in South Africa by the apartheid regime. Subjugation of the Palestinian people is wrong when carried out by anybody, including the Israelis. And just understand that anyone who opposes what I just described, because I'm describing fundamental human rights principles, anybody who opposes what I just described there, those principles, is an evil person, a bad faith person whose beliefs are not compatible with a peaceful world. So, do they have the right to be those people? Yes. I think people have the right to go ahead and speak and present themselves as, you know, racist, you know, Zionist supremacist mass murderers. They can, if they want to present themselves as that, that's their right. But don't think for a moment that they're the good people. They're the bad people. They're on the wrong side of history. They're on the, frankly, they're on the Nazi side of history. They're on the Holocaust side of history, carrying it out. They're not good people, and you should not give them any credence when they claim that they have values or principles, because they're demonstrating to you that they do not. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, and I support all human dignity of all people, including Jewish people, by the way, including people of Islam, practitioners of Islam, including Christians and non-Christians, even atheists, you know, including LGBT people, although I disagree with them, but I believe that they have the right to exist and they have the right to speak. Because again, my beliefs are universal. So thank you for listening. God bless you all. Take care. All right. Hope you enjoyed that special report. Now, for the next special report, just to crank up the controversy to another level, because why wouldn't we? I mean, I'm here to exercise free speech. And if we exercise free speech without saying something controversial, then it's not really, you're not really exercising free speech. If you just say everything is like flowers and butterflies and everything's awesome. And isn't the sun beautiful? And that's all you say is things that everybody agrees with all the time. That's boring, actually. And it's not very useful. So I started to wonder, what would life be like in America under Trump 2.0? And this is the second Trump administration. Well, technically the third, because he did win in 2020. But the second, I guess, recognized administration of Donald Trump. I think he will be installed. And I'm using that term. Well, let me clarify. It's not exactly correct to say installed. He will win the popular vote. He will win the Electoral College vote, but then he will The third requirement is that he be allowed to win. So somebody has to clamp down on all the cheating. But I think that those arrangements are being made right now so that Trump will be, quote, installed. In other words, Trump will be allowed to take the White House, even though he should have been allowed anyway, because he will win the vote. In any case, I'm very concerned about some of the things that Trump has said of what he plans to do. And I talk about that in this special report. And some of those things are, for example, cracking down on pro-Palestine students who are peaceful protesters, unarmed protesters, who it seems under Trump will be designated terrorists and rounded up and deported out of the country and denied their student visas and their education that they paid for. They paid dearly for, by the way. So I'm very concerned about some of the things that Trump is saying. I go over some of those in this special report. But I do want to say up front, I'm an open-minded person, and I'm open to Trump clarifying or correcting. I'm open to Trump changing his mind on things, by the way. And just to be clear, for many years, people would have said I was pro-Trump, and then now suddenly some people say, well, you're anti-Trump. No, I was never pro-Trump. And I was never anti-Trump because I don't worship people. I stick to principles. And here's the truth, simply stated. When Trump's actions and words resonate with the principles that I believe in, then you could say I'm pro-Trump. But I'm not really pro-Trump. I'm pro-principles. If he coincides with those principles like the First Amendment, freedom of speech, you know, protecting America, putting America first, building the wall, you know, reforming the corrupt deep state and intelligence community and, you know, all these things. When Trump is aligned with my values, then I would say I support what he's doing. When Trump abandons those values, then I'm not going to support him. Because, again, I am not, quote, loyal to a personality. I don't worship persons. I'm not into this cult of personality nonsense. I honor principles, and what I think of people and whether I support them or reject them simply depends on how well they resonate with these core principles. And these principles that I've chosen to live by, to express, to practice, and to demand of others, these are not like Mike Adams' opinions. These are fundamental pillar principles of human civilization. For example, the recognition of the dignity of every human life. That's one of my core principles, and the protection of that life, or all those lives, regardless of, you know, where they're from or what skin color they have or what religion they practice and so on. So these are fundamental principles upon which society has been built. And if you lose these principles, you will lose your civilization. So again, just to be clear, these aren't opinions that I'm like, oh, I sure wish that everybody would agree with me on like which football team to root for, whatever. I'm not into sports, but that's just an example. No, it's not that. It's fundamental principles such as your right to say no to a medical intervention. That is a fundamental human right. And anybody who disagrees with that, anybody who thinks that a vaccine should be forced upon you or that a mask should be forced upon you, is an evil person. And just like anybody who rejects the notion that every human life has value, in other words, somebody who treats some certain people like animals to be murdered and slaughtered, exterminated, genocided, those are evil people who believe those things. You can't simultaneously be a good person and then also at the same time believe that some human beings are subhuman animals that you can justifiably exterminate. Those two belief systems cannot coexist in the mind of a good person. So people who hold those beliefs are not good people. They are evil people. So check out this report here, the special report, What Will Life in America Be Like Under Trump 2.0? And just remember, even though I'm critical of Trump in this report, I'm willing to change my mind if he comes back to honoring core principles like the First Amendment. So we'll see. Enjoy the report. Let's talk about life in America under Trump 2.0, because as I said earlier, I believe that a deal has been made to install Trump in the White House, or technically to allow him to win. I mean, if it's just a straight up fair election, Trump will win anyway. Trump won in 2020. That was stolen from Trump. Trump won in 2016. He will win again. But he's being allowed to win by certain powerful players, most notably the military-industrial complex, the big pharma industry, and now, of course, the Zionists, the big money people, the bankers. They're behind Trump. They've shifted away from the Democrat Party because Joe Biden is just not going along with full-blown genocide. There's a lot of resistance from the White House right now and the State Department in terms of weapons shipments and so on. And the Zionists can't handle that. They need the United States of America to completely and wholly support their ethnic cleansing campaign, to never withhold 2,000-pound bombs, and to never criticize the Zionists, because that's part of Zionism. It's a mental illness of people who think that God speaks to them and tells them who they can murder and slaughter, and that anybody who opposes them also has to be destroyed. Yeah, it's some kind of weird megalomaniacal sociopathic mental illness, that's for sure. But they have a lot of money, and they bought off Trump. They bought off the GOP. So let's talk about life under Trump 2.0. That is, of course, if we get to election day. Now, there are still forces that are going to try to prevent an election from taking place. These nefarious forces, deep state forces, they may set off a massive false flag nuclear event, a dirty bomb, a mushroom cloud detonation in some U.S. city. They may stage a cyber attack takedown of the power grid or who knows what, or the banking system. There are all kinds of scenarios. Maybe they can convince Putin to start nuking the West, you know, because they're trying to provoke that, that's for sure. There are a lot of scenarios where the election never happens. But if the election does happen, then Trump is going to be allowed to win, i.e. installed into the White House. And by the way, one more reason why this is going to happen, if we get to election day, is because Russia is very likely to have defeated Ukraine by election day. I mean, the Ukrainian military will likely just completely crumble and retreat by this summer, at least from everything east of Kiev and the Dnieper River. Now, Odessa might be a totally different battle, but as far as most of what the Ukrainian military is supposed to be doing right now, they're done. They're done. They're basically just falling back with no defenses and no men. They're done. So it's just a question of how quickly the Russians can take new territory and take Kharkiv and ultimately reach Kiev. That could all happen before election day, and that would be very damaging to the Biden administration because of all the false promises they've made about Ukraine defeating Russia with the help of the West. None of that happened. None of that materialized. Blinken is a liar, but anyway, you already knew that. So let's talk about life under Trump. Trump wins. Trump is inaugurated. Okay. Trump says on day one, he's going to shut down all the new wind farm development. And he's going to, of course, open up a gas exploration pipeline production, such as the Keystone XL pipeline, offshore drilling and things like that. Now, I'm actually in favor of energy self-sufficiency for America. And although I love the idea of unlimited clean energy at some point, if it can be commercialized and developed and actually made to work, but that's not where we are. Wind farms are killing birds in huge numbers, sadly. Solar farms, of course, don't work when the sun isn't shining, which is, you know, more than half the time because you've got rain clouds and things like that. And a lot of the so-called green technology isn't actually very reliable. So in order for America to have a strong economy and for the American people to be prosperous and for food to be affordable and so on, you have to have affordable energy. Right now, that energy is natural gas, fossil fuels. So we need to harness those natural resources that America has that once made America great, but have been shut down by the climate cultist Democrats. So this is a plus for Trump. Trump is good on energy. The second thing Trump is going to do as he has promised, or he's alluded to this, is he's going to issue a kill list of drug narcos, you know, drug cartel leaders. And he says he may deploy the United States military to Mexico, special forces, to go into Mexico without the permission of the Mexican government and to hunt down and assassinate cartel leaders. Now, this is insane. I don't know what Trump is thinking, but he's living in the past. He's on this issue. He's living in this era where he thinks that the U.S. can just run around the world and do whatever it wants with no consequences, and that nobody can defeat a U.S. Special Forces soldier and so on and so forth. Let me tell you, I've trained with Special Forces soldiers, you know, for many years, engaged in a lot of training of self-defense, hand-to-hand combat, edge weapons combat, and then with Special Forces guys, a lot of firearms combat, rifle work, things like that. And, of course, I can tell you, Special Forces guys, they are tough dudes, but they're human. And they bleed just like everybody else. And they can be overwhelmed. They can be pinned down by enemy fire. They can be killed. They're mortal. They're not superhuman. They're not a super weapon that's immune to gunfire, okay? And even they will tell you that. The way Special Forces function effectively is because they are smart. They don't put themselves in situations where they're going to be completely surrounded by well-armed enemy forces, okay? So if Donald Trump tells them, oh, just go down to Mexico, find these 50 narco leaders, and just assassinate them. Yeah, just like in a Hollywood movie. Just go down there, find them, and shoot them up, and then come on back. Yeah, they're going to come back in pieces. Like, one day, you'll get their hands. Another day, you'll get their legs. You get the heads. You get eyeballs and fingers. Yeah, hey, they're coming back. Just not living. Because it's a dumb idea. And even any special forces person will tell you that. If you're going to go into a place like Mexico, you need the permission of the government, number one, typically. Especially you're going to be running around trying to take out these top narco people who are all tied to government. Who do you think they bribe to allow them to continue to operate? They're bribing the government. So the government's protecting them. So what you're going to end up with is a group of special forces soldiers, like, trapped somewhere deep in the hills of Michoacan or somewhere, surrounded by about 500 Mexican military personnel and, you know, screaming for some kind of bailout or something, screaming for satellite coverage or, you know, U.S. aircraft to come in. And then this is going to escalate into an international war scenario where the U.S. ends up in a war with Mexico. Not good. So that's a dumb idea. You want to stop the drug trafficking? Build a strong border wall and monitor the border wall. Have strong border security. Let's just start with that. We could interdict drug traffickers, human traffickers, weapons traffickers. I mean, you don't need to go into Mexico. You just need to defend America. And besides, it's illegal to go into Mexico and just send special forces wherever you want. But, you know, that's par for the course for U.S. empire bullying. They think they can just roll over everybody all over the world and just assassinate and murder anybody they want. You know, Trump is still living in that era in his mind. Then another thing that Trump says he's going to do is he's going to deploy the U.S. military domestically in America to round up and deport illegals. That's right. Gonna find illegal aliens, I guess, on the streets or what have you, and round them up and kick them out. Now, as you may recall, many months ago, I expressed a lot of concern about this, and then I was summoned to a meeting of high-level Texas law enforcement. I told you about this in a previous podcast, and they said, look, this is not going to be some crazy, you know, kicking in doors and going door to door to drag illegals out of their living locations. The way this is going to be enforced, they told me, at least this is the plan in Texas, as I understand it, is they're just going to do traffic stops. They're going to have greatly increased traffic enforcement, and they're going to pull over every car that looks like it's driven by an illegal. Now, that's not even difficult to spot in Texas because the illegals have a certain way of driving and they have a certain kind of vehicle. It's a vehicle that's got really poor maintenance, typically. It looks like a vehicle driven by illegals. And then they think the shoulder is another lane. They pull out in front of you. They drive like they're in Mexico. So they're kind of easy to spot. So my understanding is that law enforcement across Texas, DPS and state troopers and what have you, are going to find all kinds of reasons to pull over all these vehicles. Oh, look like your taillight had a crack in it, you know, or you're speeding, which is often the case. And then they're going to run the IDs of these people. Oh, you have no insurance. Wow, you have no driver's license. Oh, you're not even a citizen. You have no visa. Guess what? You're going back to, you know, Mexico or Venezuela, wherever you came from. And I understand that, and I can support that effort. So if you're doing traffic enforcement and then, in essence, taking illegals off the streets and shipping them back to where they came from, yes, I understand that. I think that's good. I totally support that. But what Trump is talking about is somehow deploying the military domestically in some kind of format that hasn't yet been fully described, but it sounds very, you know, authoritarian at this point. It's like, wait a second, are you going to have troops on the street corners? Like, show me your papers. Are you going to have military going into, I don't know, textile factories doing military raids of factory workers? And like, show me your IDs, you know, hands in the air. Is this what it's going to be? Because number one, that's all illegal. There's posse comitatus, which means the U.S. military is not supposed to be operating domestically for all the obvious reasons, because they are the force of government violence or threats of violence that should never be used domestically involving, you know, the American people. Even if we're talking about illegal aliens, it's intermixed with American people. I mean, you shouldn't be at the grocery store and have to prove that you're a citizen to enter the store and shop for groceries. And the thing is, there are plenty of Americans who are Hispanic looking, obviously, plenty of Americans who are Asian looking, you know, plenty of Americans Middle Eastern looking, and are they going to be profiled based on their looks? Like, if you look South American, then you have to show your ID, but if you're white, you're okay? I mean, I don't know that that's going to be the policy, but I'm concerned about that as a possibility. That's for sure. Now, I understand the need to deport illegal aliens, but there is a legal, lawful due process method for getting that done, which I support. I do not support troops on the streets of America. And then Trump has also said that he wants to deport any students on campus who are expressing, quote, anti-Semitism, which simply means these days anybody critical of Israel. You know, I'm accused of anti-Semitism simply for criticizing Israel's genocide against Palestinians. So is Trump going to deploy the military to go onto the college campuses and round up students? And what about professors? There are a lot of academic professors who are here on, you know, educational visas, and a lot of students on student visas. So if they say Palestine should be free, then what are you going to do? You're going to have soldiers bust into the classroom, hands in the air. We're from the U.S. military. A bunch of roid raging soldiers arresting little puny 120-pound foreign students who are just trying to study their, you know, quadratic equations or whatever, totally unarmed. I mean, is this what America's going to look like? I have a feeling the answer is yes, because of the Zionist control over Trump. The Zionist control over the GOP. Remember, the GOP now stands for Genocide of Palestinians. The GOP is all in with Zionism. They got a bunch of money. They got a bunch of support. The Zionists had a secret meeting with Trump not long ago and no doubt told him, although I'm just guessing, but this is my understanding, told him, look, we're going to make you president, but you're going to be completely loyal to Israel. It's going to be Israel first. Everything else is secondary. Israel first. You support Israel with money, with bombs, with your dialogue, everything. You arrest the Palestinians. You know, you deploy the military. I mean, this is going to turn America into a raging police state if this is deployed. And then you're going to have the GOP-controlled House and Senate introduce all this legislation to criminalize anything deemed anti-Semitism. So the GOP has already completely abandoned the First Amendment. They're anti-free speech now because of people speaking out against Israel and people supporting Palestinian freedom. So under a Trump presidency, obviously he'll sign that legislation because, of course, he's beholden to Israel. And so then you're going to see America turned into an authoritarian, anti-free speech police state where the government runs around arresting people who criticize genocide. That can happen under Trump. In fact, we are on track for that to happen under Trump. And so where we've just endured nearly 4 years under left-wing fascism with Biden, well, looks like we're going to have 4 years of right-wing fascism under Trump and the GOP and the Zionist controllers. I mean, that's where it looks like things are headed. Now, the upshot of all this, does this mean you shouldn't vote for Trump? Honestly, I don't think America has a choice here. I mean, you can't vote for Biden. He's deliberately working to destroy this country. RFK Jr. at one time looked really promising, but he's totally controlled by Zionist money. That's become rather apparent. And he's horrible on energy. Absolutely just horrible. He would shut down the oil and gas and try to push us into an EV economy with more solar power. And it just doesn't work. We don't have the power grid to support everybody having EVs. And by the way, the EVs suck. And that's why Ford is turning away from manufacturing them, because nobody wants them. So RFK Jr.'s policies are just horrible on energy. They're great on vaccines, though. Great about pesticides, herbicides, and dealing with big pharma. Whereas Trump is horrible on vaccines. He pushed Operation Warp Speed. And Trump doesn't seem to know anything about herbicides and pesticides and, you know, organic food and clean living lifestyles without vaccines and medical interventions. And that's not Trump's wheelhouse. So every candidate has good and bad, but the way I see it right now, at the moment, although this could change, I can't vote for any of them. I can't in good conscience vote for any of the top candidates right now where they are with their policies, knowing what they're going to do. I can't live with myself knowing that I'm responsible for helping to put somebody into power that's going to do such outrageous, horrible things to this country. And that goes for all the candidates. They're all, they've all got huge gaps in their understanding of what needs to happen. I say support a strong border, support America's energy, don't deploy the military domestically, don't invade Mexico, just have strong security, strong energy, and support clean food for the American people. Cancer rates will plummet if we have cleaner food, by the way. And stop funding all the wars everywhere. Stop with the imperialism, with the bullying, the coercion internationally. Stop it. Just get back to a stronger education system that does not mean more money for the current system. It means school choice, charter schools, homeschooling, things like that. And shut down the Department of Education. It's a joke. It's producing nothing but woke libtards, by the way. Anyway, that's my take on things. You're welcome to your own different opinion, of course, obviously. But thank you for listening today. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com. All right, now we're going to move forward here today with an interview that I am really thrilled to be able to bring you. It's an interview with an author named Randall Fitzgerald. And Mr. Fitzgerald is someone I've known for many years. I interviewed him, it seems like maybe 15 years ago. He wrote a book about the FDA and the founding of the FDA and how it's set off, well, over 100 years of basically medical terrorism. Yeah, actually, he wrote that book around 2006 because the FDA was founded in 1906. So it was right around the 100-year anniversary of the FDA's formation, of the FDA being puked into existence. So, I mean, think about it, 2006, that's quite a few years ago. Anyway, since then, Randall Fitzgerald has authored several other books, And I reconnected with him about one of his newest books called The Tao of Intuitive Luck, Winning at Games of Chance and the Game of Life. A very interesting, intriguing title. Now, Randall Fitzgerald, he used to write, I think he was even like the Wall Street Journal or some mainstream outlets. But he has gone on to explore many fascinating topics such as extraterrestrials, UFOs, mind-body interaction, and the power of the mind over physical reality. And that's what this book is about, The Tao of Intuitive Luck. And I asked him why he chose the word luck, because I'm not sure that luck is perceived by people to mean what he means when he uses the word. But anyway, I asked him the question, and you can hear his answer. But this is an extraordinary interview with an extraordinary man, and I invited him back. We're going to interview him again about aliens, extraterrestrials, and the cosmos. That should be fascinating. I don't know when that is going to be, but it's coming up at some point here. Anyway, enjoy this interview, and be sure to check out his books, Randall Fitzgerald, F-I-T-Z-G-E-R-A-L-D. That's his name. You can find him on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, booksellers everywhere. And enjoy this interview. Real quick, before we begin, thank you for supporting us at healthrangerstore.com. We are building the infrastructure of human freedom, and we're doing it with your financial support. And every time you purchase products from us at healthrangerstore.com, of course, that gives us resources that we're using to build, you know, free downloadable AI systems, large language models, for example, or platforms like Brighteon.io, or to fund Brighteon.com, the free speech video platform, and so on and so forth. So thank you for your support. Check us out at healthrangerstore.com for our entire product line there, which includes nutritional supplements, personal care products, home care, survival and preparedness items as well, long-term storable food, all organic, all laboratory tested, heavily scrutinized, more than anybody else in the industry that I've ever heard of. We do extensive mass spec lab testing. You've probably heard me talk about it. So thank you for your support, healthrangerstore.com. With that said, enjoy the interview with Randall Fitzgerald, and I'll have some updates for you probably over the weekend. Take care. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And as you know, I talk about, cosmic reality quite a bit, and also the reality beyond our physical being, consciousness, the mind, and how the mind is actually both a receiver and a transmitter of information. And there's so much more to this. And our guest today is an expert in an area, what he calls intuitive luck. His book is called The Tao of Intuitive Luck. His name is Randall Fitzgerald. He's the author of several fascinating books, including one that I talked about years ago called The 100-Year Lie about the FDA. But he joins us today to talk about the cosmos and consciousness and how we can make the rules of the universe work in our favor. Welcome to the show, Mr. Fitzgerald. It's a pleasure to have you back on.
Well, Mike, it's a pleasure to be back with you after all these decades.
I can't believe it's been this long. So welcome to the show, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Pleasure to be back with you, Mike.
It's an honor to have you on. And of course, I've admired your work for so many years. I can't believe we haven't spoken during this time. But here you are now with an extraordinary book, as it's been explained to me. I haven't read it yet, but I'm familiar with some of the basic concepts. But please give our audience just a quick background of who you are, what this book is about, why you decided to pursue this area of knowledge of cosmic truth.
So my background is in newspapers and magazines. I started out in the 1970s in Washington, D.C., where I spent 20 years working for various newspapers. I wrote for the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. For many years, I was the roving editor of Reader's Digest magazine. And then I started writing books on eclectic subjects. I have a rather eccentric range of interest. From health, especially natural health and good eating, all the way to the realms and frontiers of science and consciousness. So I'd always been interested, beginning with a magazine that I produced back in the late 70s called Second Look. I'd been interested in the whole frontiers of science in connection with the search for extraterrestrial life, the origins of civilization, and the nature of consciousness. And this latest book really is about the nature of consciousness by focusing in on intuition. Intuition, something which quite often we take for granted, but is, along with the rational mind, a very important player in our consensus reality and also in our individual pursuit of happiness in life, because intuition is like an early warning system, and it manifests for people in various ways, for everyone is different. It manifests physically in various ways. Some people sense that knowing of intuition through their bodies, through a feeling in their stomach, the solar plexus, through a racing heart, or through mental imagery. It occurs a variety of ways. So I wanted to focus in on the science research, looking at all the various ways we experience intuition, and also the research on how can we better access intuition? How can we manage it or control it in such a way that it benefits us?
That's truly fascinating. But let me ask you, why did you choose the word luck for the title? Because as you know, in the reductionist scientific materialist world, the term luck refers to something that is utterly random and spontaneous without cause. And that I don't think that's the context in which you're using the term.
Well, luck actually is wedded to intuition in several ways. Yes, luck is random. We have the law of averages, of probability theory. We know that luck is something that occurs based on chance. And chance is often random, but sometimes there's a limit to that in the sense that consciousness itself can influence luck, and it influences luck through intuition. For instance, there's a professor of statistics that I quote throughout my book named Mike Orkin. He's at Cal State University. And he once said that games of chance are in casinos like metaphors for the uncertainties of life. Everything that seems out of control in life, you know, the probability theory equations about what interactions will produce. And he said the best way to observe the laws of chance in motion is to go to a casino and watch people play games of chance at card tables, dice, or slot machines, because there's almost instantaneous action and reward at work. And the reward sometimes usually is actually a loss. But still, when intuition arises, when someone gets an intuitive feeling or an intuitive voice that says, play this slot machine, this particular one, right now, and you obey, and then you get a reward. You get a jackpot, or you get something out of the ordinary. And you've obeyed your intuition, and it has produced something that is beneficial to you. Now, most mathematicians would say this itself, even though it might be a synchronicity, is something predicted by the law of averages, by chance. But when it happens repeatedly, when someone's intuition is on target in a streak, so to speak, then it's beyond that realm. It gets into the realm of consciousness actually influencing the physical world. And this is where the whole subject of parapsychology comes in. There's been decades of research, and I read hundreds of these studies that have been done by reputable institutions, reputable scientists, and have been replicated at times, that tend to show that human minds can influence, for instance, random number generators, which are the microchips inside of slot machines. A lot of random number generator research has been done to show that there is a slight influence that occurs. It's not a big influence, but it's a slight one. And a slight influence when it comes to games of chance, can skew the results in your favor.
And I would point out, I'm familiar with some of those studies that you're citing, the slight influence repeatedly over time breaks out of the statistical boundaries of what could be considered chance. I mean, this is
yes.
This clearly is influence. And I just want to bring in, I'm not trying to plug my own things here. This is not for sale. It's free. But I wrote a book called The Contagious Mind a couple of years ago that talks about similar things, that the mind is broadcasting information and knowledge, and it's actually contributing to a framework of patterns of nature, as Rupert Sheldrake writes about as well. Talks about the morphic resonance. That's one way to describe these things. And then you have a quote for your book, The Tao of Intuitive Luck, from Dean Radin of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which has done extensive research in this area that you're referring to. And I'll get to my question here in a second, but I'm just trying to establish the context for the audience that what you are saying and what the studies that you're citing are saying is that the mind exists beyond the skull. That the mind influences the fabric, the causal reality of the universe in ways that can be detected through statistical analysis of so-called games of chance. Is that correct?
Yes. And whether we call it the holographic mind or, gosh, in mystical terms, it's often called the Akashic Records.
Yes.
There's a repository that minds can connect to, and that's where we get inspiration, et cetera, et cetera. However one wants to define it, it is about the non-physical realm. It is about information theory, and it's about information theory applied to human consciousness.
So then this, if the world were to recognize this and embrace it, rather than trying to dismiss it, because I believe we live in a world where we are taught that consciousness is an artifact of neurology, and that consciousness therefore isn't real, and that therefore you don't have a real choice, that you're just like a biological pinball machine bouncing off the walls of reality. Mm-hmm. And that's the overriding philosophy that we're taught, you know, the science, you have to trust the science. But if that paradigm were to shift, what changes would that bring about in our world? If suddenly everybody realized that what you're saying is true.
Mm-hmm. Well, utilizing intuition in that way as a tool for human interactions would help to create a much more transparent world. It would be trusting our gut instincts, as it's often called, to the extent that we see through the promises of politicians. We see through the claims being made by fringe scientists who are seeking to make a buck. We see through all aspects of human interactions where deception is an operative word. And I think that would facilitate a much better world in so many different respects.
I completely agree with you, but and wouldn't it also demonstrate to people that we are all connected through something that transcends our individual brains? You know, it's very easy to isolate groups of people today or to denigrate groups of people, to say, well, they're not even human. They're just animals, let's say. But when you realize that we're all not just human beings in the physical being, but we're conscious beings, that we actually contribute to the fabric of the cosmos of the universe. We actually alter collectively, especially. I mean, talk about that. What about the power of, you know, a million conscious minds focusing on one thing? What does that do?
Interesting. At Princeton University, you're probably familiar with the subjects. It was a global look at how human consciousness and the attention, the focus of attention of millions of minds might impact the quantum world from the standpoint of random number generators in computers scattered across the planet. So at Princeton, in the engineering department, they did quite a few studies that examined, for instance, in the aftermath of 9/11, what was the impact of human consciousness and attention suddenly as a result of the events in Washington, D.C. and New York on September 11th, as a result of those events, what happened when so many people were watching the news and their minds were gravitating toward the events happening on 9/11? And what they discovered is that there were quirks that occurred in the patterns, the random number of patterns that were being spit out in the printouts from these computers. And there seemed to be an overall collective mentality at work that was influencing the subatomic world. Other studies were done at Princeton as well, looking at many other events. But major events like 9/11 seemed to have the greatest impact, seeming to indicate that this web of consciousness, as you refer to it, is focused and at work whenever human events are dialed in to a particular channel.
And so doesn't that speak to the real goal of the controlled media that no doubt you've seen over your years of work, how much of the narratives are scripted and controlled and not based on what would actually enhance and empower humanity? But so many of the narratives are designed to focus attention on specific topics in order to in order to alter human consciousness in a collective way. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. And I get back to whether it's conscious or unconscious as a process. Now, obviously, at the individual level, when you have producers and editors making decisions about what coverage will be given to what particular subjects, what news stories will be given priority and precedence over others, et cetera. All of those decisions collectively, of course, tend to reflect a mindset. And it's a mindset that can be formed in journalism schools and broadcast journalism schools and universities around the world based on the teaching methods, based on the teaching patterns and information used in order to program a particular approach to information, massaging information for public consumption. So all of that can play a role at both the conscious and the unconscious levels.
Now, let me give out your website. It's the TaoofIntuitiveLuck.com. And Tao is spelled T-A-O, the TaoofIntuitiveLuck.com. That's also the title of one of your books. You have several other books here, Alien in the Mirror, Cosmic Test Tube, Lucky You, and so on. These are fascinating topics. Now that we're having this interview, I want to check out some of these books. But what is Cosmic Test Tube all about?
Well, it is an encyclopedic compendium of all of the theories and evidence ever proposed up until that point. The book came out in 1999. But everything that had been proposed up until that point about the search for extraterrestrial life, about visitation by extraterrestrial life, about interactions with the non-human beings or entities of consciousness. It is basically taking all of the literature produced up until that point, condensing it, summarizing it, and showing the patterns in the material over time as ideas evolved, as theories evolved. That book had a new edition, which came out last year, called Alien in the Mirror, which took all of the material from 1900 all the way up to last year, and also summarized it. So it's a rather big book. It's, you know, over 400 or 500 pages, and a lot of material, and I spent many years on it. But it's part of my fascination with how theories and ideas and conspiracy theories tend to evolve over time.
Okay, all right. I got to say right now, we've You're invited to come back on and talk about just that book.
Oh, I would be honored, Mike. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Because this is a subject of great fascination to our audience as well. I think it takes a very tiny mind to think that we are alone in this great cosmos, right? Clearly we're not the only ones in all these galaxies, not even just our own galaxy. But it's interesting because we're working on an AI project where we're training language models on alternative information and herbs and natural health and medicine, and releasing those models for free to the public. And someone contacted me from an institute just 2 days ago that is donating 2,600 books on UFOs and aliens to our project. And I was just thinking, oh, you just gave me like 8 months of work for all my computers to crunch all that stuff. But it seems like you've compiled the best evidence or the most available evidence in this book, Alien in the Mirror, and maybe I should be using that book first.
I would hope so, because it takes all points of view, Mike. I even look at the skeptics, the debunkers, and all of the books they produced, and I condense them and condense the ideas and contrast them to the believers. I contrast all of those to the scientists in the SETI program and their books and their ideas.
Wow.
And so it really is encyclopedic in scope, and it's very broad, and it takes in a lot of subject matters that ordinarily might seem unconnected in the public mind.
Wow. Okay. Truly fascinating. We'll mark that down as another interview to do with you coming up. But let's get back now to your newest book, The Tao of Intuitive Luck. And one of the promises that's implied in your book and in your work is that people can use this, they can harness this intuitive luck in order to enhance their own lives. What are some of the practical things that you talk about that people can do in this manner?
Well, some of it is round up the usual suspects. For instance, meditation. I mean, meditation is the basis for so much in the way of natural health, natural mental health, especially. In the case of luck and intuition, what I found was through reading about the experiments in which meditation was used, where people in parapsychological experiments meditated beforehand in order to clear their mind, that it's important to have a program, a technique to use to take out all of the unnecessary mind chatter, clear the mind, get your internal guidance system operating at optimal level in order to pick up these signals, in order to send the signals, in order to be a channel. It's important to have that sort of clarity. And it comes with practice, of course, with meditation. But there are other practices one can do in order to set up a vibration. I mean, everything is vibratory, whether it's the cell that's vibrating or whether it's the neurons vibrating with each other to produce thoughts. Life is about vibrations. So if we do chanting, something that, for instance, creates a vibration, that's helpful. It facilitates a part of this process of accessing intuition more clearly and with a greater repetition. So all of these, and there are probably a dozen different techniques that I explore in the book, and all of it is science-based.
Okay, so the power of the spoken word is something that's even, of course, mentioned in the Bible and other religious texts from around the world. And that's also consistent with the idea of positive affirmations. Do you believe that the spoken word, not just thinking about it, but speaking it, that there's some method by which it imprints more strongly intention upon the fabric of the cosmos?
Yes, and the research indicates that. There's been quite a bit of research on that. And at the individual level and at the level of setting an intention, manifesting it, I mean, one doesn't have to be an adherent of, the old secret, the secret book and movie, a documentary, in order to know that there is a type of law of attraction, and it's vibrations. It's vibratory. It's a foundation, becoming a foundation now of physics, and has for quite some time. And so if we take it to its logical and natural extreme, it's something that connects us all, and also at the same time gives us a sense of meaning, even a sense of awe about a life that we often don't realize and uncover fully, because we're so caught up in the minute details of life that tend to bog us down and distract us.
Yes, yes. And the mobile phone interruptions that are only, right. You know, have been with us about one generation, which is changing things in dramatic ways. But let me ask you a trick question next, that's kind of a follow-up to the last question, about the power of the spoken word. Now, there are, how important is the presence of consciousness behind those words, conscious intention? Because there are, of course, today, there are AI-generated avatars, and there's AI text-to-speech programs. And, you know, we're working on an AI program for a different reason, not to trick anybody, but to present knowledge to people. But somebody could have, you know, a room full of AI computers with speakers speaking out positive intentions that sound human, but it's just silicon behind it. Would that have the same effect as a conscious person doing it? In other words, can this phenomenon be synthesized through machines, or does that not count?
That is not just a trick question. It is becoming one of the ultimate questions. In the book, The Tao of Intuitive Look, I talk about the cosmic trickster. Now, the cosmic trickster is manifesting through AI now. And the cosmic trickster is an ancient idea. It's an idea that there's an energy form. The Greeks call it Hermes. And it's a form that tricks the human mind. And it tricks us in various ways. Internally, it can trick us with our own delusions and our habits of mind. It can trick us from the standpoint of wanting to believe, and the entire intention set of wanting to believe can manifest a very illusory sort of consensus reality, which is the potential that we face now with AI, that AI can, in its collective entity sort of way, because it's becoming an entity unto itself, that it can manifest an illusory consensus reality that the human mind will have difficulty, individual minds particularly, in determining what is real and what is mass produced.
Well, absolutely. But I need to ask you back to the question, though, can a synthesized spoken word alter the causative reality of the cosmos in the same way as a human conscious intention spoken word?
I can only speculate with you about that, Mike, because it's not something that I've studied. It's not something that I'm smart enough actually to know the cutting edge of in terms of the current philosophical thought about the implications of AI.
Okay.
It's something I could spend the rest of my life, in fact, studying. Maybe I will, with your inspiration.
Well, you know, and one of the reasons I asked that question, consider this possible scenario where, let's say, somebody online offers a prayer service for you, except the prayers are carried out by computers. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we'll have 100 popes praying for you, but they're simulated popes or whatever. You get the idea. And then they can even take a video of, you know, like a bank of 100 laptops all speaking out prayers for you. And somebody selling that service might say, you know, this is more powerful than any just one person praying for you. This is 100 virtual avatars praying for you. And, you know, you would ask the question, does this count? Is it scammy? Is it legit? You know, right? Those are the kinds of questions that would come to mind.
So there's an experiment, a series of experiments that could be done to test the placebo effect. You could have a placebo triggered by AI, or you could have it triggered by one individual or a collection of individuals in a prayer group somewhere. Testing that would be an interesting process.
Yeah, sure would be.
And I would certainly, it would open up a whole range of possible experiments that could be done, looking at the impact of placebos and belief as the interaction is triggered by either AI or human consciousness.
And on the dark side, maybe there's like a dark secret government somewhere that actually has like a deep cave full of thousands of computers, and they're all praying to enslave humanity at every moment, right? And like they've cracked the code to keep us enslaved.
You have a wonderful mind, Mike, and I can see many science fiction novels ahead for you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, but that's the thing is that here we are, we're living in a cosmos and that is so mysterious and so intriguing. And you strike me as a particularly curious individual. I think curiosity drives a lot of your work. And I consider myself to be curious as well and also very open-minded about what's going on. But most people live in such a mundane, simpleton, materialistic, flat earth version of reality.
Yes, you know, an abject fear. Most people live with being singed by fear every day.
That's right.
By the news headlines or whatever it is. And being in a fear-ridden society is not healthy. And that's where having optimists and hopeful people around and having pleasant and positive thoughts is so very nurturing and therapeutic. And that's what I hope to do with some of my books, like The Tao of Intuitive Luck. It has a very hopeful and optimistic side to it in the sense that you too can harness your intuition and it can be utilized to benefit your life in so many wonderful ways if you just open your mind to the possibilities.
Let me ask you this question with a personal event that affected me strongly as well. I think our audience will resonate with this, but there are many times in my life where I've received intuitive information and then I chose to ignore it. And it was in my experience, it was always a horrible mistake. And over time I learned to listen to intuition. And yes. Every time that I've listened to intuition, it has been extremely rewarding, but usually it required a leap of faith because there was not evidence in my consciousness or observation of why I should be doing this thing, just rather strong intuition. And I had to trust that and take that leap of faith, and then it paid off. It's like faith is required somehow. What's this all about?
Yes, well, I quote a number of people along this line. In the book, here's one quote from Oprah Winfrey. She said, "I've trusted the still small voice of intuition my entire life. The only time I've made mistakes is when I didn't listen."
Oh my gosh. I just said the same thing that Oprah said. Now I'm freaked out.
You did. And you deserve to be with Oprah on a stage talking about this because it is quite important.
I think I'm banned from Oprah, by the way. I don't think anybody in the mainstream will ever have me on, but that's beside the point. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you're in good company out there on the periphery because it's on the periphery that we get a perspective on life and human interactions that ends up being prophetic.
Indeed.
So in any respect, back to Oprah and that trusting the small, still voice of intuition. Yes, it is a whispered voice quite often. And quite often our rational mind, and sometimes with good reason, ignores that voice because we haven't all learned how to trust the voice. And how do we trust it? We have to experiment. We're all guinea pigs in our own life experiments. All of us.
That's true.
And whether we're doing it consciously or unconsciously, we're engaged in experiments where we test whether our intuition is on target. If it's as simple as standing in line at a grocery store and you're looking at five or six different lines and you're trying to decide which line am I going to stand in that's going to be the fastest. And you look and your rational mind says, over here, there are only a couple of people with few things to be checked by the checker. So let's stand over there. So you go over there and stand there. And then there's a malfunction or something happens and you're standing there for a long time because it wasn't about the quantity. It was about the quality of the information. And then your intuition has told you, no, you got to stand over here, and you failed to listen. And sure enough, if you had listened, you would have gone through the line faster. You would have found a parking space that you were searching for, whatever it might be. You know, it's something simple, or it can be something major, like, I can't date this one woman. I see something in the future that's going to be negative. I better stay away. But you don't. And then it comes true and you say, oh, I wish I'd trust my intuition. But there are lots of ways to look how to test your intuition, how each one of us can test it is part of what the book is all about, because there are lots of ways, lots of little personal experiments we can do.
Wow, that's a very powerful message. I'm really glad to be able to talk with you today. And I regret that this is so short compared to what you and I could explore, but we'll do it again. We'll have you back. We'll talk about your other books and maybe explore some more topics here. Let me give out your website again. It's thedaoofintuitiveluck.com, and Dao is spelled T-A-O. And our guest today is Randall Fitzgerald, and his books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other booksellers, and they include Alien in the Mirror, Lucky You, The 100-Year Lie, Cosmic Test Tube. And Randall, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap this up today?
No, Mike, but I would like to speak with you again, because everything, all of those books are intertwined and interconnected, and we can explore those interconnections next time.
Absolutely. And look, let me pose a question that we can talk about next time too, because you and I are both into nutrition, natural health, and we understand that toxicity in foods alters the functioning of the physical brain, which impacts or suppresses our ability to access the non-physical mind. So there is a direct link between what we choose to eat or not eat and the results that we get with our consciousness. And that's a link that not a lot of people understand. Because you know, the non-material mind is translated through the physical neurons in order to get into our physical being.
Yes, so, toxins in food create toxic brains, which create toxic thoughts and toxic actions.
100%. So let's write that down. I mean, we'll make a note, but let's talk about that next time, and then we'll get into aliens and whatever else you want to talk about. But it'll be a fascinating conversation. I can't wait.
Look forward. Happy trails.
Okay. Thank you, Randall. It's a pleasure to have you back on again. Thank you for all your work and contributions to our world. So that's Randall Fitzgerald, everybody. Extraordinary man, extraordinary writer. The Tao of Intuitive Luck, if you want to find out how to improve your results and the power of your consciousness to make positive decisions and have positive impacts in your life. If things aren't just going in the right direction and you think you deserve better, you probably do. And there's a way to access that. And this book can help you learn how to do that. So check it out, and his website as well, thedaoofintuitiveluck.com. Thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. Take care, everybody. We've got several high demand products that are finally back in stock at our online store, healthrangerstore.com. Let me show a few of these. We've got pea protein back in stock. That's the only protein that we have in stock currently. It's very difficult in the supply chain right now, but we've got pea protein back in stock, all laboratory tested, of course, certified organic. We have our golden milk drink mix, which has turmeric and ginger. It's absolutely delicious, has amazing support for your health. Check that out. Golden milk. The blueberry vanilla pancake mix is back in stock with, of course, real blueberries, not artificial. We have the pine needle nasal spray back in stock and Manuka honey. And on top of that, and by the way, that Manuka honey is laboratory certified and it's from Australia. We've also got laundry detergent back in stock. And that's not going to last very long because, of course, we have laundry detergent that has no synthetic fragrances, no harsh chemicals, and yet it still works. It's very clean. It's good for the environment as well as good for your own health. And it's good to have it on your skin in terms of, you know, washing your clothes in it. So it won't last long. I think we only have fewer than 1,000 units in stock. I'm telling you, the supply chains are difficult to work with these days. So when we get these products back in stock, we usually don't have the quantity that we want, and they sell out pretty quickly. So check all this out at healthrangerstore.com, plus many other products that will benefit your health and your life. If you go to healthrangerstore.com, you'll see some of what we have, like this collagen peptide chocolate coconut drink mix. It's very delicious. We're getting a lot of rave reviews about that. We have organic bee pollen, as you can see, the mini bucket of organic blueberry vanilla pancake mix. It's excellent storable food, and many other items here. Just go to our store, healthrangerstore.com, check them out. And remember that every purchase helps support our efforts to bring you intriguing interviews and information, as well as helping us build the infrastructure of human freedom through the free tools like Brighteon.ai and Brighteon.io, free tools that we're giving back to you in order to exercise your free speech and preserve human knowledge through our AI language model projects that are non-commercial, free of charge, open source. Those are available at Brighteon.ai, and all of it is funded by your support of our store, healthrangerstore.com. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thank you for your support. Take care.